Welcome to Your Money Today, a unique look at financial, geopolitical, and other news relevant to you. For 45 years now, your host, Chris Temple, has provided his one-of-a-kind insights and advice on the markets and on our world. Whatever the subject, he calls them like he sees them. Roll up your sleeves with Chris as we get into today's program.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm recording this episode on Sunday evening, the 1st of February, and not for the first time in this still early 2026. I'm compelled by events to jump in maybe quicker than I might have otherwise. And of course, the most recent event, as we learned early Friday morning, was the nomination of Kevin Warsh to be President Trump's choice as the next Fed chairman to replace Jerome Powell. If all goes well, of course, he would step in, if confirmed by the Senate, to Powell's role come May this year. Whether Powell is going to stay on and finish up his term on the Board of Governors, even though he wouldn't be chairman anymore through 2028, remains to be seen. He's been very coy about that, including at the Fed meeting last week. And there are reasons to believe that this may not come off quite in May. I've already talked about this and won't belabor the point tonight, but the criminal investigation right now against the Fed and against Jerome Powell specifically for alleged lies he told Congress the middle of last year on the budget and the game plan and whatnot for rehabbing the Fed's Eccles Building headquarters is something that's not rubbed a lot of people right. And it's pretty well been made known that the Warsh nomination, even though Warsh will sail through confirmation in relative terms, I think, you know, he's very much an establishment pick. I don't think anybody's going to try and oppose him. But a lot of senators are saying that until this purported attack on the Fed's independence, as it has been labeled, is done away with, meaning that this case against Powell is dropped, there's not going to be any action on Warsh's nomination or on a second empty seat that we're going to have now from Stephen Miron, whose brief tenure at the Fed is thankfully over as of this last week. Now, in the case of Warsh, this is going to be the fifth shift change, if you will, of my career that I've followed at the Fed. Of course, when I first got in this industry in the late 1970s, hard to believe, Paul Volcker was Fed chairman, and we went from him to Alan Greenspan, then to helicopter Ben Bernanke, who introduced quantitative easing to the world. Of course, before that, we can't forget Greenspan, who never met an unregulated derivative contract he didn't like, and that was his contribution to the Fed growing increasingly speculative and bubbly and all that stuff over the years. So he had Greenspan, then Bernanke, then Janet Yellen, who was relative to the others kind of tame and half boring with her tenure. Then we went from her to Jerome Powell, who, as far as shooting from the hip, has probably been the biggest screw-up in Fed history, which most people know. And, you know, though he's childish about it at times, President Trump, you know, is not incorrect technically when he talks about the bad decision-making that Jerome Powell has made. Two things, basically. One, from goosing four-decade-high inflation in a massive overreaction to COVID, just throwing caution to the wind, and then, you know, being late to recognize that inflation wasn't transitory after all, and then now painfully slow in bringing interest rates back down when some people say the Fed should do that. We'll talk about that in the context of Warsh in just a moment. But first of all, I want to address quickly the markets on Friday, because that's important. Then we're going to talk about Warsh and his background and why he's been nominated, what we can expect, what's real, what's populist rhetoric. Just like Warsh's would-be boss spews a lot of populist rhetoric that doesn't actually come to be, unfortunately. And then we're going to get back to what the future of the markets is in light of all of this. First of all, as I said in my email Friday morning to our broad email list, our freebie commentary list, if you will, and if you didn't see that, you need to be on that list. So before you do anything else today, go to nationalinvestor.com, click click on free newsletter and make sure you sign up. And I'll make sure that we send you last Friday's missive as well as those that are going to come in the future. That's the list where I talk about broad economic issues, the macro situation, stories like this, and sometimes some of our recommended companies, although for all of my recommendations, you need to be a paid member. That information is on the website as well. But anyways, on Friday morning's message, I said my view was that the beating that especially the metals took on Friday was really a delayed reaction. This is something that should have started on Wednesday. Because as I said on Wednesday after the Fed meeting, and I did a podcast separately from Your Money Today with my buddy Mike Fox of the Prospector Podcast, that link is on our webpage as well, so I won't repeat any of that here. But if you listened to Powell and after the Fed meeting last Wednesday, it was very clear that Powell was saying, don't hold your breath for a rate cut anytime soon, any further than this. The economy is still doing well. Inflation is still elevated, etc. Now, Warsh is going to say he disagrees with that because he agrees with President Trump that we don't want to be punishing economic growth. That's not what the Fed is looking at. So Warsh is being disingenuous. We'll get to that in a minute. But anyways, given the Fed's posture on Wednesday, it would have made sense if we had seen stocks sell off, metals sell off, the dollar rally, interest rates firm up after the Fed meeting on Wednesday. We only got some of that. The dollar didn't really bounce from its pretty drastic decline of late until after that, when Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, was forced to say that, oh no, we aren't helping Japan intervene to weaken the dollar and strengthen the yen. So the dollar bounced on that news. The dollar should have bounced on the Fed meeting, and it most decidedly bounced on Friday when the Warsh news came out, because this, as I'll say again in a minute, it is a nomination on the president's part, anything but the kind of nominee he's been saying he wanted to a great extent. And I'll explain all the reasons why for that. So we had this delayed reaction on Friday when all of a sudden the markets, which were ignoring the same kind of message, frankly, that Powell gave them on Wednesday, looked at the Warsh nomination. They look at his background, always been very hawkish on monetary policy, derisive of quantitative easing, derisive of Powell having printed all of the money he did in the wake of COVID, and said, holy cow, we might not get a Trump sycophant who the first meeting is going to drop interest rates to 1% after all. Maybe we're all out over our skis here. So, and again, I think that that's the environment that I've said is coming in 2026 anyway, that it's not going to be as easy going forward, that the Fed is going to be constrained by market forces, the bond market vigilantes and others, from lowering interest rates too much more. And that's pretty much what Powell was beating around the bush and saying on Wednesday. So, you know, and the other thing you got to remember when it came to the metal specifically was that midday on Friday, the CME again raised maintenance requirements for all of the precious metals. Gold's maintenance requirement, you had to go from a 6% coverage to 8%. For silver, it was from 11 to 15%. That especially hurt. And double-digit increases in maintenance requirements to keep some of the more dopey speculation from latecomers from really wrecking these markets. And that's why you saw the metals, and especially silver, fall out of bed the way that they did on Friday. They may or may not bounce come the beginning of this week. But I think that the die has been cast, and we're going to have much more of a two-way market now for the foreseeable future until everybody figures out, you know, what all of this Warsh stuff is going to mean and what's going to happen. So who is Kevin Warsh? For those of you who don't know, Kevin Warsh, when he was put on the Board of Governors of the Fed initially way back before the Great Financial Crisis, and was also prior to that an advisor to the George Bush Jr. administration, he was the youngest ever member of the Board of Governors of the Fed. He was 35 years old. A lot of the comments that have come out in the wake of his pick, especially from those like me, who don't like the Fed as an institution, don't trust anything that we hear as far as political rhetoric, because the House always wins, meaning the deep state and the establishment always wins, the populist rhetoric notwithstanding. Kevin Warsh is a guy straight out of central casting. In fact, I could make the case for hours that he is even more of an establishment pick. Sure as hell not a MAGA pick in any way, shape, or form. But right out of central casting, much more so than Jerome Powell was when Donald Trump nominated him back in 2017 to succeed Janet Yellen. So the last thing that he is, meaning Warsh, is a pushover, a Trump sycophant, or anything like that. He does believe a lot of the talking points about Trump and Treasury Secretary Bessent in regards to some reforms that they're looking at for the Fed and how it's run, which I would say within the context of the Fed are needed. Of course, those of you who follow me know my attitude that I would prefer that we didn't have a Federal Reserve to begin with, but I'm not going to get my way on that, probably not in my lifetime. But moving on, Warsh has had a big hand in a lot of the deal-making and the cleanup in the wake of the global financial crisis back in 2008. I've shared a lot of these things on social media for those that want to roll up their sleeves and get into all of the dirt from the past, or good things from the past, as the case may be. So I'm not going to repeat all of that here. But he's been very, very involved from a relatively young age in the banking fraternity. The guy, again, is the last thing in the world he is a MAGA outsider. He's been a big member of the Bilderberg Group globally. He's married into the Estee Lauder family fortune. Ron Lauder is his father-in-law. And again, this guy is very, very much one of the major banking swamp creatures, to use President Trump's term. I don't necessarily say that in a derisive way either. So I want to just for a few minutes talk about the main points that Warsh has discussed recently, what his game plan seems to be. I have shared on social media, mostly on X, but sometimes I copy these things and put them on LinkedIn also, or on our National Investor Facebook page, but most of these things are on X because that's where I first find them. There have been a few really interesting tidbits of Warsh's speeches or interviews in a recent past, and I want to go down the list of the main points. Some of them will matter, some of them won't, and in the end, as I've said many, many times, the president can pine for whatever policies he wants. The Fed chair, Powell currently, Warsh, if he succeeds him successfully, will be in the same boat. The markets are going to allow them to do only so much. And when you've got a situation now of $39 trillion national debt to round it off and climbing still, it's not as easy as saying, oh, I think the productivity is great, we're kind of back where we were in the 90s, and we can lower interest rates. Let's not keep artificially high interest rates and hobble the economy, which if it only was allowed to flourish and grow, we'd be going gangbusters. Well, that'd be true if we didn't already have a $39 trillion debt load we're choking on that we've got to pay $1.5 trillion plus interest on. But that, you know, we'll talk about that more in the days ahead as well, not only where it concerns Warsh, but otherwise. But here's one of the big selling points that Warsh is going to make. He already is in the recent past, along with the president. He believes that the Fed needs to be reformed in the way it goes about its business. I've discussed this a few times. Treasury Secretary Bessent has talked about this. You've had a Fed under Jerome Powell, who, and I said this at the outset, he's probably the biggest single screw-up. Not necessarily that any Fed chairman has got a good hand, because this the fractional reserve system they preside over is flawed as a matter of simple math. I've said that a million times. I've explained it a million times. I'll be doing it again in the near term to help you get your heads around how the markets are going to be looking for the rest of the year. But for present purposes, Warsh is determined at the outset to change the institutional framework of the Fed as far as its decision-making process and make it much more rigid and formulaic. All right, none of this shoot from the hip, none of these wild swings where Jerome Powell, as you should remember, in the wake of COVID, went nutso printing money to try and help patch everything over with the self-inflicted recession that came from Biden, first from Trump, and then from Biden's policies, which made it worse, and led to so much money being created in unproductive ways that it resulted in the highest consumer and producer inflation since the 70s and into the early 80s. Powell went way too far in that direction, let it linger too long, and insisting along the way that it was transitory, it's a figment of your imagination, whatever. Then he had egg on his face. He's got to start reversing that. Didn't do that quickly enough, okay? And now we're at a place where, you know, to hear President Trump or really Kevin Warsh say it, the Fed should have been lowering interest rates faster. They're now in a place where the market is constraining them along with persistent inflation still. So it's not quite as simple as even Warsh is going to try and make out when he goes in front of the Senate for his confirmation hearings ultimately. So a Chairman Warsh would be inclined to have much more of a rules-based approach to get rid of these extreme swings, really in either direction as far as inflation, the monetary policy, the money supply, and so forth itself. Some of these things that he's talked about over time are conceptual. It's hard to understand now, even when you compare it to when he was much more of a hands-on banker in a system back during a financial crisis. We've come a long way, baby, since then. Much more leverage, much more debt, a lot more that you can't do given those dynamics in the markets. So it's going to be a challenge. You know, so I think that, again, within the context of the flawed world we have and the flawed Federal Reserve system that we have, his stated desires to have this rules-based approach is the right approach. His heart is in the right place. I've had a few people ask me recently about this. Some of you heard one of the discussions I had recently. I think it was one with Maurice Jackson, the Proven and Probable. And we were talking about, you know, how you can have an expansionary monetary policy, but not one that leads to inflation if you have a strict rule that allows only for a certain level of an increase in the monetary base, so as not to be too hot, because at the end of the day, it's supply and demand. Too much money chasing too few goods leads to higher prices. And the opposite is true as well. So here again, I think Warsh is on board with all that kind of thing, a much more rules-based approach. One of the other things, and this may be the backdoor way that President Trump and Treasury Secretary Bessent are going to try and get their way, because of course, you know, and this is why Kevin Hassett, who is the president's chief economic advisor, he was a front runner for quite a while until just recent weeks for the job. No way in hell was he going to be confirmed by the Senate, because, you know, he wears being a Trump sycophant on his sleeve, and the markets, let alone the Senate, would not trust him to be an independent player and to look at things as they need to be, whether the president likes it or not. I don't think Warsh is going to have nearly that kind of a problem, and certainly not with the background he has. Again, a guy that's straight out of the swamp, straight out of the banking establishment, right out of central casting, etc. But here's one of the things that Warsh has said, and this is going to bear watching, because if anything is going to cause a major problem when his confirmation hearing comes out, it's going to be this. And that is that Warsh has said that the Fed itself needs to be reined in. Well, what does that mean? In the context of reining in a Fed, which under Jerome Powell had the shoot from the hip policy, operating on hunches, after the fact try and rationalize it with mumbo jumbo, and you end up with egg on your face in both directions, inflation and otherwise. Warsh wants to see the Fed whittle down and be less important and less of an issue with the broad economy. Now, specifically, way back in 1951, you never heard this, even if you went to economics class in a business school. You never heard this if you went to nor did I. You know, when you went to get your license as a broker, an investment advisor, whatever. But there's an accord that was reached between a Treasury and a Federal Reserve way back in 1951. Okay? And that was basically where, at the time, the Treasury Department, under then, I was still under Truman. I'm sorry, I was going to say Eisenhower, under President Truman, said, okay, we're going to keep hands off of the Fed. The Fed was set up by Congress and signed by President Wilson in 1913 as an independent central bank. So that's what it means. And we're gonna butt out. We might, you know, voice our opinion from time to time, but the Fed pretty much has a free hand. Warsh has said that he wants to have somewhat of a recommitment, but also revisit this whole thing. And I'm quoting now from a story in the Financial Times, where he said that this accord would entail a smaller and less powerful central bank with some control of its balance sheet handed to the Treasury. Remember that. Mark it down, because, again, I guarantee you that at least one senator, maybe more, and it could be Democrats or Republicans, because there's reason why both of them won't like this, will look at this and say, okay, this is the back doorway. You know, Trump is trying to be cute. You know, he doesn't give us a populist MAGA guy to replace Powell. He gives us this guy, Kevin Warsh, who his whole life has been a banker for the system, and, you know, pristine resume by and large, as far as, you know, most people are going to be concerned. Not necessarily the case, but, you know, who knows how everyone will look at that. But here's a guy that maybe the Trojan horse that will allow the administration through the Treasury to get more control of monetary policy after all. So you better believe that there's going to be a lot of questions on this. Now, in principle, I'm one, and this might shock some of you, who, all else being equal, believes that if it's for the legitimate betterment of the economy and all Americans, that I would rather see the Treasury or the elected officials have more control over money than a group of private bankers whose system has done nothing over time but make the rich richer and everybody. Now, Warsh himself has said that numerous times, especially in recent months, where he's tried to dial back some of his hawkish positions of his past. Likely in preparation for this day that's upon him now, and point out that that's what has happened. Wall Street has benefited greatly. He's made very eloquent conversations about this. So one of them to the Reagan Foundation gathering a few months back. I forwarded that on the social media as well. Very good snippet, and sounds great. And it's going to sound great to the media. It's going to sound great to a lot of the senators when he goes to get confirmed. But even if he's sincere about all this, what does it mean? What can he do? All right, let's say, for example, that, and I'll just use one of many examples, he says that the balance sheet has been way too big that the Fed has had. It's distorted markets too much. It needs to be whittled down. Granted, fine, 100%, I agree. Who the hell's going to buy a few trillion dollars worth of these bonds if you sell them? This idea that I heard him discuss, I think it was recently on Larry Kudlow's show on Fox, where we're going to get rid of the, you know, some of the balance sheet with the Fed, take the Fed out of the game of setting policy in such a heavy-handed way, and turn it over to Main Street. Well, all else being equal, if the Fed sells off more of its balance sheet, that means interest rates in the market go up, not down. What's the transmission mechanism going to be so that it helps Main Street and that you still have mortgage rates and Treasury yields move lower even as the Fed reduces its balance sheet? That's a neat trick of alchemy that I want to see him or somebody pull off. That's an interesting one. Else poor or just running in place. You know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think the bond market vigilantes are going to have something to say about that. But anyway, you know, the landscape that we're going to have is that there is very definitely a desire for reform at the Fed, for a more sensible, rules-based approach, the headline of getting the Fed from being such an overt force in the markets is certainly going to sell. The headline of Warsh wanting to help home buyers, of course, the president last week said he wants the housing bubble to get bigger to help people who already own homes, so screw everybody else. You know, we'll probably see that walk back by Warsh when he goes in front of the Senate, I'm sure, because he's going to be reminded of that as well. I guarantee you that. But, you know, all of these things sound good. A lot of them are needed within the system that we have. But here again, we've got to be realistic as to how much of the populist rhetoric that we're going to hear can really legitimately translate into actual policy. You know, Warsh is right when he says, as Powell has said, even though Powell's actions didn't show this, regrettably, but when Powell, every time he does a press conference, comes out with that same, you know, pablum that's insulting, you know, our role here is to manage monetary policy for the benefit of the American people, for stable prices, blah, blah, blah. Well, you did a piss-poor job of it, okay? But along the way, even though his actions belied this, Powell would at least say and point out that inflation hurts the average Joe six-pack and Sally soccer mom more than high borrowing costs. Warsh has said the same thing, and I think actually believes it a little bit more, and by his past and by some of his present pronouncements would act on that more. Now, that tells you that if inflation stays sticky, let alone moves up a little bit more, he's not going to be the easy touch to lower interest rates anymore, if he's honest about that. You know, besides the overall populist rhetoric, again, not to belabor it, we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about in the months and years probably ahead, so I don't want to belabor this now. I want to wrap this up before I get into a few more comments on the markets. You know, Warsh is saying all of the right things, as anybody that's now in his position and is going to go in front of, you know, at least partly hostile Senate Finance Committee some point in the near future. You know, he's saying what he needs to say. He's correctly said that, Jerome Powell, the Powell-led Fed and its response to the pandemic, he said is the biggest monetary policy error in 45 years. You know, since, of course, the Arthur Burns era. So, no question about that. He says that the Fed has been too backward-looking. It's too much by the seat of its pants and all the rest of this stuff. No question. He is also going to sell the idea that he believes that we're starting a new cycle, and he's going to hearken back to the Reagan tax cuts and productivity and deregulation, which we had a kind of a second act of in the 90s, all right? Some of that you're going to have to keep in the back of your mind as well when he discusses it, and I'll certainly have a lot to say about it when the time comes. But this is an area where President Trump and Treasury Secretary Bessent are trying really hard to sell the idea of their own fiscal profligacy. And what to date is President Trump's complete or 99.8% complete failure to rein in the size of government and government spending. They're trying to sell it on the idea that, well, look, we can do this because we're going to have such productivity gains from AI, from deregulation, from all the tax legislation, all the rest of this stuff. The economy is going to run so hot that we can run all these huge deficits, lower interest rates, etc. Well, among other things where I would push back on that, and you have to remember this, one of the reasons why the 80s and 90s did not see all of the monetary easing and financial bubbles and credit expansion and all of that stuff lead nearly as much to the kind of producer and consumer inflation spikes that we saw under Powell in the last few years is because in the 80s and 90s, first Paul Volcker and then Alan Greenspan had a lot of cover because we were outsourcing much of our labor in the U.S. That was one of the things that kept Main Street inflation lower than it would have been otherwise. It's because the labor costs were down. That dynamic has changed with the way the world is changing and globalization is reversing, etc. That's not going to repeat in the years ahead as it did in the 80s and the 90s. But that's the sales pitch. That's why Warsh will get in front of the Senate and say that, well, to the extent that, you know, we think inflation is still going down in the right direction, we're going to continue to reduce interest rates as we see fit, because we don't want to penalize or hobble this magnificent growth boom that we're going to have that will be less if we don't lower interest rates fast enough. All right, that's a sales pitch. So whether everybody on the Senate buys it or not, I don't know. Again, all else being equal, his background, his globalist connections, the fact that he is, the last thing he is a MAGA banker. You know, he's part of the club. He's been there pretty much the majority, if not all, of his adult life. I don't think there's anything that's going to seriously derail him replacing Powell. There's two exceptions, as I already mentioned. One is that the Senate may not do anything until the investigation on Powell is done away with. And you better believe, especially if the stock market rebels, because the president is very sensitive to that, that President Trump will run up the white flag if it comes to that. And the other thing being, if the Senate is uncomfortable with this idea of Warsh's idea of the Fed-Treasury relationship, giving more of the power back to the Treasury, i.e., of course, to President Trump, because that's where everybody will say that that leads. So we'll see what happens. And of course, I'll be commenting on this as the days go by, and especially once we get to his, you know, confirmation hearing in the Senate, which I'm sure we're going to have to stock up on a beer and a popcorn for that. Now, a few quick comments on the markets as we start off the first full week of February, or get set to. I've said for quite a while, not that this mattered a whole hell of a lot because everything kept going up, that we were going to have much more of a two-way market in 2026 than we did last year. And that when you boil it all down, most markets, even the metals in the recent past, have all been bought hand over fist on this notion that we were going to have significant rate cuts still for 2026, still a lot of easy money, and that inflation would behave sufficiently to allow the Fed to do that at the least. Okay? That has not been playing out. Jerome Powell told us all that on Wednesday. And again, as I said at the outset of this podcast, most people weren't believing it. But then all of a sudden, Friday, they got hit over the head with a 2x4 when Warsh was nominated. And somebody, okay, all right, this is not the guy who's going to pursue the kind of policy necessarily that we thought we were going to enjoy that would allow us to continue to feel bulletproof and keep buying everything. So we're going to have a two-way market. This may have marked a near-term top for the metals, for the stock market. The Treasury market is going to stay elevated as far as the yields are concerned. So does this mean the world is going to end? No. Honestly, all else being equal, to me, this means that the odds of a massive bust between now and the midterm elections may have just reduced a bit if the market is going to clean up its own act, looking ahead to a new Fed, but one that is not going to be the lapdog of the Trump administration necessarily. Because again, and I can't stress this enough, this is what the markets thought they were going to have and be able to play with all through 2026 as they did all through 2025. That's not going to be the case. So we learned last week that producer prices are still rising substantially. We seem to have recently seen the bottom in energy prices, and especially with the spike in natural gas with the cold weather of the recent past, oil stabilizing and moving up. Of course, geopolitics are going to have a lot to do with what oil does in the near term, but all of the good news on the inflation front for oil is probably in. Ominously, the inflation uptick last week on producer prices was led by services, something that Jerome Powell said was no longer a worry for him, pretty much. Well, that's not necessarily true. So we're going to have a situation now going forward of the best case scenario, I think, is the markets are going to plod along and not in a straight line, not necessarily neatly or cleanly. They're going to reprice themselves for the environment that we're truly in and have been in, one of stagflation, one of sticky inflation, one of the Fed being severely limited as to what it can do interest rate-wise. You already know, if you've been listening to me, the Fed already restarted quantitative easing under another name in December to keep the markets liquid and keep everything afloat. And by and large, as Powell said last Wednesday, measures of liquidity and that part of the economy is very accommodative. So the Fed can keep the markets at least intact and keep them from imploding without having to lower interest rates. But markets in that environment are going to have to reprice themselves for more of the real world. And that means that the metals are going to be more subdued going forward. I still am very bullish long term. But I think I'm going to be even more vindicated now in the days ahead from having said in the recent past to be taking some money off the table, but also going down the food chain because there's a lot of precious metals stocks. There's a lot of base metals stocks and so forth that have not had huge moves in the last year that I love for the long term. And I don't care what the near-term prices are. They are all listed as a buy on my recommended list, including one that I highlighted in that email I sent out Friday morning, which on a day that everything else pretty much in the precious metal space got annihilated, this exploration stock, which is now the biggest new exploration story in all of North America in precious metals pretty much, it was up almost 30% on Friday based on all the succession of good news it's come out with. So there's still a lot of places that you can put money to work and great stories like that. But otherwise, you're going to have a little bit more sober expectations for the months ahead. Realize that the market is going to, in a kind of a haphazard way, have to reprice itself. But there will be some benefits. I think there's a lot of good places that got left behind when on and off the AI stocks and the Mag 7 and all of the larger cap ones were doing well. There's going to be a lot of stuff that got left behind that I think is going to do well this year. I've been starting to add a few more conservative yield-oriented picks to my recommended list also. So anyway, be sober, be realistic, be vigilant. Recognize that even a Kevin Hassett, for all of the good things he says he wants to do, is still going to have a 39 trillion reasons against him why he may be hobbled as to what he can even do going forward as Fed chairman if and when he gets in that position. So that's what we have for you tonight. I'm glad that you tuned in. Well, tonight or whenever it is you're listening to this podcast, maybe in the days ahead. And again, if you didn't get my missive from Friday morning, it was very important. Other updates in there as well, besides the one great gold exploration mover that I talked about. Make sure you go to nationalinvestor.com and sign up for my free newsletter. And we'll see you again down the road, not too far.
We're glad you joined us today. As always, write to chris@nationalinvestor.com with your comments and questions. And be sure to visit yourmoneytoday.org if you haven't already. Sign up for our free alerts, notifications of new shows, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.